Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Getting It Done. I don't have all the fanfare and music playing and all that to get me into the show. However, this is Getting It Done, and I am your host, Dr. Walter Dean. This month, I've been featuring a lot of great jazz musicians who probably would never reach the history books, and that brings up the question, why do we have black history? The question is easy to answer. However, I will answer this question with a question, and hopefully you will understand the answer. Basically, how many black people are in our history books that you might have read when you were in school, public or private? This month I have featured those that should have been in the history books and those that may be or should be because of their lateness and death be in the history books. And I started off with one of the great ones, Charlie Parker on saxophone, who was one of the founders of the bebop music, was later on into the foundation of the kind of classical jazz music that we have today. And then I went on to Earl Garner and a whole bunch, host of other people. Wes Montgomery were guitar players I played. Today, I'm not going to spend too much time talking, mainly because I have to cover a lot of stuff in a very short period of time. And we're going to listen to a great and probably the greatest keyboard person, I would say. And that's Oscar Peterson. It's wonderful to hear, by the way, many of these people's voices who are no longer with us. And Oscar is one of those. And he had a delightful personality and a very deep ability to think in such a way that would allow you to see a big picture of what he did and how he grew up. Because, you see, he was as great as he was, he still had to experience what most black people had to experience during that time, and in most cases, some of the same things today. So let's give a listen to the great Oscar Peterson.
That face that is usually covered by her phone has finally made an appearance.
I rode to the Calgary Stampede, where they have great suits for the Stampede.
To have the Queen's Guards Band playing one of my compositions, March Past, is quite an honor.
The recognition I haven't always had at home.
When I grew up in jazz, Europe was where it was at. I had very fond memories of being welcomed there when I was touring with jazz and Philharmonic, playing with people like Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Lester Young, and of course, Elvis Presley.
I think the first time I heard him was when we played Toronto. I think it was some kind of club he was playing in. We had to go around there to catch him all the time. And I was just amazed at the way that he was playing. Playing like a teacher. One of his sons is my godchild. I don't know what it looks like now. It's been so long since I've seen him.
So many tours. So many concerts. So many great memories, with so little time for my family. The ones I neglected, the somehow got left behind. It's time to get them back. Quite a few of these youngsters are on this train that I don't even know, and they're related to me. What are you going to be like? Just in my grandchildren. There's one daughter, my eldest daughter, Lily. She and I haven't communicated for quite a few years because we disagreed, and we agreed to disagree. And just before this train ride, shortly, a couple of weeks before, I called your brother to come on the train ride.
And since this is deep happiness, I know we very happy to see all his grandchildren and all his children all in one place. Has some sadness too. You know, maybe just reflecting on seeing the whole family together, maybe he was just he's thinking of his parents. He certainly didn't live long enough to see that he was the greatest jazz pianist in the world. And that's one thing I'm sure he's saying he knew.
It's hard for me to believe it's been 30 years. But sitting here reflecting, the memories are flooding back. All the people I've played with, the early days, the memories of my mom and dad. The days are lovely.
So when I was able to get in, he paid so much amount of money. So then when you went to, you couldn't pay, and when you went to pay, they increased the dollar.
She had a, like, right? She was from, she had a practice. And
anyway, Mr. Hale, when he gets to Austin, boy, is he going to get his head busted, you know. And usually I skated through the lesson somehow.
But, and then, so if you know he's taken it, so he'll take it from the early family, let's take it from the beginning. And this always happened, I think, right at the beginning, take it from him, but he could be more than this, because he was just playing the ball out. So after that, I didn't play anything for him. I let him make it himself. Well, I think it was really overpowered by the freedom with which he was able to play.
Looking back on it, it adds the man to a far too much for Daisy. I think she lost her confidence.
Two.
The man certainly was gifted. Much different than other people. She has a word about her. That somehow, I don't know how she does it, she may not even leave them with a belief that they can play. They can. I know, it was one of the students.
I started with the Davis when we finished. But most of the kids in the neighborhood, everyone went to Mrs. Sweeney. And it was just the idea that also I used to play next door, right next door to the Peterson's. I used to sit in the porch and listen to them practice with the under. And I think it was then that I really became fascinated with what can be done on the ground.
He's asked to do his version of Chinatown.
I don't look because I don't have to get to where I had some clout.
That was the sole reason for that. There's a long issue taking on the African army for the Federals. You know, by the way, they're going to put a wall there with a howitzer, possibly a bomb.
He's definitely taken Canada by storm as the greatest thing in Barrel House, Big and Ruby, and Beat Me Daddy into the bar since Mr. Steinway started making those pianos.
So I used to go wonder, I kind of know those things you said, when I go off to Westmont City Hall or Victoria Hall, where Oscar was playing, but I'm a little taken with, first of all, with his fame, but also his human internet. So, you know, I never had a classical training because it was incredibly beautiful.
I think that is a particular gift that is hard to describe, but you might forget. I know that some people will never forget them, even though you don't let them go well. And I just heard us do it and I can remember it. You know, the notes that stick in my head for a long time.
I got permission to lose the camera in the auditorium up to Ohio. That was the best way to have a bunch of girls come down, because they all come down and lunch out here and be played. So I was doing like the MD guy. You know, my dad explained what he wanted to be. Then I came into him and said, I learned in high school studies what I should be doing, algebra and writing parts of the career, whatever, piano and composing tunes. And I remember him speaking and said, there are a lot of jazz band players out there. Yeah. He said, you're just going to be known to me. I don't know. And he finally said, I can't let you leave high school and be a jazz band player. If you want to be the best, I'll let you go. But you have to be the best. There is no second best. According to Dad's expectations, this is the man that I don't have to measure up to. Several months ago, I was invited to dinner at Chris Jones' house. Oscar was there, and it gave me a great opportunity to ask a few of someone who was one of my mentors about our parents. Because my feeling has always been that both Matt Corey and Art Tatum have been big influences on Oscar's style. And I mentioned to them that every time I hear Art Tatum play, whenever I put a record on Art Tatum, the next thing I put was, I wonder if there are any more electrical engineers in the world. I thought, you can't even do that thing, you know. I mean, I'm going to ask you, do you have any experience with me and my kid? So I said, so you know, when he was a kid, that he was kind of a hot shot, you know, out there, and he was kind of cocky, too, at the same time. And so one day, his father said to him, hey, your brother does, that's for me. That's too many. I can't do it. I'm much better than him. And eventually he recovered from the trauma. My first step was to join a big band. John Williams was a white trumpet player. He decided to put together his own big band. And it became really the best known big band in Montreal. Close encounters with New York, and because of my being black, the only black in the band. And strange as it seems, I could probably say it now, they probably could have been invited if we had a few more blacks in the band. But when you're the only one out of that race in a band, you're noticed. And I remember we were due to play an engagement to Wisconsin. And they found it once we found out someone brought it to their attention that I was in the band, and they weren't going to have this. I was thinking at the time, depending on Johnny's handling of the situation, I was seriously thinking of quitting. Because if you had said, well, we can't play there, then I'd ask for a really place you for that night. I was out of that band like in a flash. As it turned out, he had some relatives or some connections. I was glad to go on and break away, if you will. I think it might help somewhere down the line. But I hated him making concessions to me. Because after all, wasn't as if I was totally in Northern Canada. So, but Debbie Dillon eventually used to be called the Johnny Gonzalez for Future and Oscar Peterson. It eventually became that kind of promotion. And the fans used to love him as well. So Oscar really had this nice, comfortable room. And it was from there that he moved to the Alberta Lounge, where he moved out of his own playing the trio without abandoning him.
This is 9 years ago when I started the very first trio in Montreal. A man would come from Georgia year after year to hear me play. And I'd insist on meeting me 1 year on his vacation. And I said, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to meet you. I'm putting my hand out. And his response was, I love your playing. He said, but I could never shake hands with a nigger. A lot of musicians learn to do it, breaking the color barrier. But as a promoter, Donald Williams, who did more than anyone to break it down, he just refused to accept it.
Story by Norman Williams discovered Oscar Peterson in Montreal was become quite a legend in this town. Oscar Peterson had been playing at the Alberta Lounge at the head of his own trio for a couple of years in Montreal. He's quite the top of the town. He's well known and well liked as a musician. Norman Williams had come to Montreal on business. And the taxi radio was tuned to a live transmission from the Alberta Lounge, which was not uncommon in these days to have radio remotes from nightclubs.
And I heard this fantastic piano player, but I assume there was a disc jockey playing records. And I said, no, I said, it's live. It's a Alberta Lounge, it's awesome for this. So that came into the, forget the music, let's go back to it.
When the first thing I saw were those, I don't know what you call them, buckskin shoes and white, with the sort of tan stripe across all the college kids. And he was known, that was one of his trademarks. Look how funny these shoes. So I sort of visually followed, moving them out, went up the shoes, put the skin up pants, and then I left them there. Of course, that was trademark, the eyebrows, so it's a huge honor. So, just try to keep up with play.
I suggested that since my show, Jazz and Philharmonic, was opening at Carnegie in a few weeks, that he might come down as my guest, and then I could maybe put him on as a surprise artist, but in effect calling him up from the audience.
Thank you. club was over, you know, it was virtually was over. They were screaming and some of them were slamming it and so forth. And I guess it was when I let the signal off. I guess you can stay on stage. It was a dream come true, more than a dream. It was a fantasy. And it was suddenly thrown in with them. I'm working with them. You know, it was like, wow. And if anything sustains me, thinking about even the comforts of Montreal and the Montreal community, was the fact that I was the point. And I had carefully done some homework on various players who were dominating the jazz scene at that time. And to get it very figuratively, I kind of figured they were in range. And I made a listen. You can't possibly travel with jazz and soul music without learning something. Roy Eldridge, Dizzy, Allen, and the game taught me many things. Not only about playing music, but about living life. To me, this was serious business, but to them, it was just another gig. I remember working in the studio one day, and there was Dizzy, stretched out on the floor, taking a nap before the session. So I came to that. Don't tell Oscar how to go anywhere. He said, I'm going to shoot me. So Oscar came to the studio and sent me there. And he looked and saw me there on the floor. And he said, I'm going to go to the system. He said,
Recognition.
the hate letters about Roy can't do this man, he can't play nothing. You know, he's white. Whatever that has to do with, I don't know. I'm black in him. I think I'm black in him. I'm the color of the room. You reached me. I still be able to play with my play right now. That trio was the most boring band I've ever been in my life. You know, I think Oscar, who loved Nat Cole, and Nat Cole had a trio with just piano, bass, and guitar. But he carried it much further. At times, we sounded like Count Basie, you know. I mean, he would want it to sound like a full orchestra. And then at times, it sounded like a small group. So it took a lot of preparation and work to achieve that. Our first concert was always Hartford, Connecticut. That was a sort of out concert. And then we had in New York, Connecticut. It's been in 60 cities. Relationship with Oscar, which was kind of special. I think the awesome thing became New York, because that was foreign area totally for Oscar. You know, that in some ways was like. Branch, the real star of jazz, born in with Marvin Branch. He took jazz to heights that weren't imagined a few years before. He traveled around the world, and that Marvin, in fact, all of us really wanted it. There's some respectability for jazz. We wanted to take it out of the back alley clubs and give it some dignity as an art form. And in Europe, genuine appreciation. Most things are more traditions we have had forward. There was a big disaster in this country in the room that was decided that jazz and theater came in. And there were a relief concert for the victims. And the first American musicians to come and the rest of the trial. It was the first American I've ever heard in flesh. And of course, it was, if I didn't fall out of the camera, I heard everything like that. You've heard it in records, and you've seen it in it's not the same. The actual singers really gave me, they were sent in front of me. They were all together, but that was nearly 30 years ago.
We're
going to
stop right here for a moment. And I wanted to tell you about some things that you probably, as an audience, were not able to recognize. First of all, I wanted to bring to your attention some of the people who you've been listening to. Herbie Hancock has been one of those particular persons who was mentored under Oscar Peterson, mentored him. He was, you know, then there's this Ella Fitzgerald, who was a part of that whole process. And she was also a part of that Jazz at the Philharmonics. And you heard Dizzy Gillespie talk. So you've heard quite a few people that are no longer with us. Herbie Hancock's still here. But I wanted you to recognize those particular voices. Let's go on.
In his pants, just after the work, we all went to this bar without. There were a couple of moons in there. And the guys were mostly the guys with the bar. That was sitting there, and they started making comments about the darkies and the tongue. And the way we went, the bar was quite crowded. The people understood what they were saying. And that this was mostly about the guys from Jazz for all the rest of the team. Anybody to a person got up in the lounge and went to the bar with these two sitting by themselves. So, you know, And that early childhood was a lot simpler. And many of the Westerners were. Those were things that we ran into. Served as a reminder that things hadn't changed too much in the United States. Here's one American who met on the plane. He wasn't like that. Chief Justice Earl Warren of the United States Supreme Court claimed just what visit. At the time, he was leading the American civil rights struggle.
What made me feel so unrealized that that man should be black? Don't worry, Chief.
I got in a cab once, and somebody stepped in front of me. And then he used the famous words, get out of the way, nigger. And I just fought. I put him back out of the cab and knocked him out.
The Southern United States was almost impossible traveling for various times because, you know, you're under pressure. You're under threat sometimes. And Norman decided to use JTB as a wedge to break into a lot of these segregated hotels, restaurants, motels, whatever it was, and concert halls.
Well, they were the pioneers of. I remember a lot of the circumstances itself. It was living in Seattle and then going down south and really having to get used to seeing two different towns, you know, somebody who's got a living room, so a bus station, the four-way buses, the white and colored, the hotels, you know, the apartment place to stay. Venues that you play, and the total admission for $3.50, for general admission, and $1.50 for white spectators used to sit up in the balcony and watch the black people dance. So, unfortunately, it got to be just a common thing. And then you just got used to it.
What really happened was I was on stage. I forgot about the third song. Next thing I know, the spotlight had me blinded off the stage, off to a pretty dark, as you know, when you're women. Next thing I know, I was hit around the ankles, and I was kind of tripped. I guess it was sort of reaching over me, but like, about the land. Well, that's about racism.
I don't think anyone this is to be a very dogmatic statement, but I stand by it. I don't think anyone really gets into jazz, a lot of the player, I'm talking about the public, and understands what it's about and understands what the musicians are about without understanding racism.
Because the hurting part would be when they pull up and there's no way, hotel-wise, the bus would stop at the big white hotel, grand windows and the door. I mean, when we were there, we were looking at the bus like, I'm not going to get out here. They're trying to get me here. This sort of thing. And all the white members of the troop would get off. To me, they were embarrassed and hurt. You know, like, flip and say, well, down there, man. And I could see that they were doing that a couple of days out. Then I told them, I said, I'm going to come because we're going to be outside the tracks.
But playing the last one way, I always stay with the black hotel with them, but some of the white, most of the white guys would stay at the white hotel, and the black would stay at the black, but I always, I couldn't find any reason not to, you know. I wanted to be with them anyway, and I would have just felt I couldn't handle it.
It was Dallas we used to move to. And of course, Melvin, I should let everybody out. I'm not out of here. So, we're bringing the bags. He's like, I don't even know when they came up, guys. You know, big cops with the big guns. You know, I don't see the little big six shooters or whatever. Fellows over. And he's barred up in the cat. He said, she's not giving me that cat. And he said, she's getting me that cat. She's right to give me that cat. She's getting me that cat. This big railroads got a couple of men's men that said that they want to be living in one of these cats because they're the one that kill you. He's like, Jason, I hate you worse than I hate these mothers. That was their own philosophy. And I didn't know that the cat was mine. Of course, I was stretching. shake his hand, which said, oh, it's going to be so get on the cab, he's like, you can have that good one. Well, you can see it, and he's just like, this one, that was,
Okay,
it was in Houston. They came backstage to the police and arrested Ella and Roy Elvis and Lord Bunce that were back in the dressing rooms playing dice and gambling between themselves for fun. And they said that was against the law, they took them all down to jail. But we were breaking through, and Red America was at least beginning to recognize talent.
The Last King Cole Show! With Norman Blank! And his jazz at the Philharmonic!
...1944 was my privilege to found jazz at the Philharmonic. No one would have guessed at that time, least of all myself, the extent to which these concerts would grow. It's been a fabulous experience. It's been my life. At that first concert at Jazz Lights, our piano soloist was Nat King Cole.
Thank you very much, Norman. You know, I'd like to let our listeners know before we begin that this is the first television appearance of Jazz the Philharmonic. And that
he also really known Norm's name more than just a musical statement. He also made a tremendous political statement. But he had yet to honor our brands for all the things that he did. I know he had. And with all the gut wrenching, nervous, apprehensive meetings that we had to spend as members of this troupe, whether we were in any of those places alive at times, I don't think we should be awarded. I think we should be awarded. And if you look at the musical end of it, it becomes even more ludicrous.
I'm going to stop right there again because there's some people I need to actually bring to your attention because of the great Nat King Cole had a television show. And the reason why he had some great musicians and great people on it. However, Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Billy Eckstein, all of the greats were on that show. However, he could not get sponsors for the show. So the show had to be canceled after 6 months. But, you know, it's really interesting that you had an opportunity to hear him talk to Norman Gatz at that particular point. Also, Herb Ellis, who played the guitar, was a gentleman who you also heard who said that he's white and he didn't stay in the hotels even though he could have, but he stayed in the black hotels with the other musicians. Let's go on from here.
Sorry, Jay, one time I was gone in New York, over a month, nobody knew. I was there. Who we saw that the only way to do it was to give up the road and try to put his life back together. He got married, became a session musician in L.A. I had to live, so to speak, musically speaking, without everybody else to get to remove from the group. It was a time of change. I could feel it not only musically, but emotionally. People were beginning to do what we had been doing for so many years. They were saying, enough was enough. Too many doors had been slammed shut. Ironically, Norman tried to open one for me in the studios in L.A. I had better thoughts about Canada than I had about the United States. This is my country. And I've always been comfortable here. I've always loved it. Considering their faults, right in my hometown. There were demonstrations, people taking to the streets in protest. Ironically, when you think about it, musicians and performers have done this for years. You know, they got out on stage and worked with one another. This race with that race. You know, this type of person, that type of person. It's no problem. So I guess it's kind of means that we have to turn the world into a world of performance so that they understand what love is all about. Written during the upheaval years of the 60s, when it seemed like there was going to be a huge and very awful confrontation in America.
Although it was recognized, but not really. Not even made a great deal of money.
obviously got the money mixed it up. You know, from that point, you know, there was new styles of music coming in. We were playing music that couldn't play anywhere, couldn't sit on the same bandstand. You know, but from the music aspect, we're getting a fair shake. So we had to fight very hard to get, you know, by being consistent and sticking to his guns.
But I'm a promoter. I want to put it nicely. So I didn't have to ask anybody if they wanted Oscar. I simply went to Hall and to the publicity. And in effect, Oscar had another outlet for his talents.
There was a new generation turning into a different beat. We had to fight for our audiences. And so this became the era of the jazz festival. What we had to do was to appeal to them without losing the integrity of the music or jazz was dead.
In many ways, it could have been the last gasp of jazz as I liked and understood it. The concert maintained his own standard and never deviated from it, never lowered it. It finally got across to people, and to promoters particularly, that this was a permanent kind of an artist.
Come to an ending. It's been a pleasure listening to one of the greatest jazz pianist players that I've ever heard. And it was nice to be able to live and appreciate during my time his playing. Have a good week, y'all. Take care.